He'd begged and scraped and even lied a little to borrow the first installment for Ricky. There was no way he could squeeze another $50,000 from a personal balance sheet already heavily padded and still teetering on the edge of insolvency. His nice large house was choked with a fat mortgage held by his father. His father signed his paychecks. His cars were large and imported, but they had 1,000,000 miles on them and little value. Who in Baker's, Iowa, would want to buy an 11-year-old Mercedes? And what if he managed to somehow steal the money? The criminal, otherwise known as Ricky, would simply thank him again, then demand more. It was over. Time for the pills. Time for the gun. The phone startled him. Without thinking, he scrambled to his feet and grabbed the receiver. "Hello?" he grunted. "Where the hell are you?" It was his father with a tone he knew so well.
I'm not feeling well,
he managed to say, staring at his watch and now remembering the 10:30 meeting with a very important inspector from the FDIC.
"I don't give a damn how you feel. Mr. Coldhurst from the FDIC has been waiting in my office for 15 minutes. "I'm vomiting, Dad," he said, and cringed again with the word dad.
51 years old, still using the word dad.
"You're lying. Why didn't you call in if you're sick? Gladys told me she saw you just before 10 walking toward the post office. What the hell's going on here?"
"Excuse me. I gotta go to the toilet. I'll call you later."
He hung up. The Valium rolled in like a pleasant fog, and he sat on the edge of his bed, staring at the lavender squares scattered on the floor. Ideas were slow in coming, hampered by the pills. He could hide the letters, then kill himself. His suicide note would place the bulk of the blame on his father. Death was not an altogether unpleasant prospect. No more marriage, no more bank, no more dad, no more Baker's, Iowa, no more hiding in the closet. But he would miss his children and grandchildren. And what if this Ricky monster didn't learn of the suicide and sent another letter and they found it, and somehow Quince got himself outed anyway long after his funeral? The next lousy idea involved a conspiracy with his secretary, a woman he trusted marginally to begin with. He would tell her the truth, then ask her to write a letter to Ricky and break the news of Quince Garb's suicide. Together, Quince and his secretary could scheme and fake their way through a suicide, and in the process take some measure of revenge against Ricky. But he'd rather be dead than tell his secretary. The third idea occurred after the Valium had settled in at full throttle, and it made him smile. Why not try a little honesty? Write a letter to Ricky and plead poverty. Offer another $10,000 and tell him that's all. If Ricky was determined to destroy him, then he, Quince, would have no choice but to come after Ricky. He'd inform the FBI, let them track the letters and the wire transfers, and both men would go down in flames. He slept on the floor for 30 minutes, then gathered his jacket, gloves, and overcoat. He left the house without seeing the maid. As he drove to town, flushed with the desire to confront the truth, he admitted aloud that only the money mattered. His father was 81. The bank stock was worth about $10 million. Someday it would be his. Stay in the closet until the cash was in hand, then live any way he damned well pleased. Don't screw up the money. End of side 3.